The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
By your command.
I felt a great disturbance in the Force.
Resistance is futile.
Built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Exterminate!
Silent breed is people!
I'll be back.
That sounds like something out of science fiction.
We live in a spaceship, dear.
Hear ye, hear ye. I'm Dave Nelson, and on this 12th day of November 2014, I call to order this, the 30th meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. So let's commence with ye old roll call. Brad Ludwig, are you here?
I am here.
Welcome aboard, my friend.
Thank you. It's good to be aboard. And we've made the big 3-0.
Yes. Now we can, what's 30? We're old. No, wait a second. 40's old. What's 30? Anything? You're not 20 anymore.
No.
Well, you use 5 years of getting a discount on your car insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Back in my day.
What's that, Ryan?
Isn't it paper? The paper anniversary? It's paper?
I think so.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's paper.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyways, okay, so we have these hypothetical questions. Brad, yours is this week. What type of crazy future movie or TV technology would you want to become reality right now?
Replicator.
Bam! There we go.
Yep. Can have food or objects just produced for you. Have that energy turned into matter and boom, done. There it is.
It's like when you get the three wishes. One of the wishes always has to be more wishes, right? So it's the ultimate that. Because make something that can make something.
Yes.
You never run out of things that way. All right. Moving on with the roll call. Anessa Moyens, are you here?
Yes.
Okay. Your hypothetical this week, since winter has arrived in Wisconsin, would you rather be kept warm with a phaser-warmed rock like they do on Star Trek all the time? They get stuck on a Arctic planet, and they have to warm. They have to keep warm, so they take the phaser out and warm up the rock. Or your second choice is to keep warm, climbing inside a freshly killed tauntaun. Which would you rather do?
Going with the rock. It's less smelly, messy.
Yeah, not as wet.
Gross.
Although, if you run out of food, you can open up his stomach, right, and eat what he ate.
You're already covered in stomach acid. That would just be gross. It's like eating vomit.
Or better yet, you could eat the tauntaun. What the hell was I thinking?
I'd rather just totally for food.
All right, let's move on to our guest. Let's introduce our guest. He is the co-host of The Gamer's Inn, Zombies Ate My Podcast, and the Sleeping with the Elephant podcast with his co-host, former member of the Galactic Netcast family, Paul Swickard, from Peterborough, Ontario. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Mr. Ryan Murphy. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you for having me. I did not steal Paul. I don't know what I did. Paul, I had candy. Paul came over. We started a podcast.
It's the candy.
Yeah. Well, it was Canadian candy, and you know.
Oh, see? There's no fighting against that.
Yeah, you can't. I'm trying to think of a Canadian candy bar, but most of them are just...
Aerobar.
Aerobar is British.
Oh, man.
What?
And we do have Aerobars in the States.
They do?
Oh.
I used to buy them all the time.
How did I miss that?
It
depends on where you go for the Aerobars.
What about the maple flavor?
I had Aerobars when I was in the UK for about a month, and so a lot of the stuff that I ate in the UK, you can find in the States.
Okay. Hmm. How about, Ryan, how about Wonder Bar? That's Canadian, right?
Yeah, maybe. Wonder Bar. It's got the weird commercials with the Vikings.
I've had that too in the States.
Really? Mm. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Timbits. What about Timbits?
That I'm not familiar with. We found one. There we go.
Boom. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah. All right. Wind out Tim Hortons.
Anyways, welcome aboard, Ryan. It's good to have you here. And I forgot to play your fanfare, so hang on. Hold on to your seat. Get ready for this. This is how we welcome every single guest on every single episode. Here we go. You're blown away, aren't you? You're blown away.
Quite the trumpet.
We like to make our guests feel welcome, and that's how we do it.
I feel much more welcome now. You know what? I've guested on a few podcasts and never been trumpeted in, so I kind of feel like this is a first. It's amazing.
That's the we go above and beyond the call of duty here on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club.
Right. Good.
All right. So this is the show where we talk about the week's science fiction news and discussions. But before we do that, we have to talk about what we talked about last week. Brad, did you write up the minutes from last week's meeting?
Did I?
Yes.
Sure. Yes. They are right here.
Okay.
I'm looking right at them. You know what? We should start with the story that I had, which was Royal Caribbean as a new ship that they put together where everybody gets a balcony view no matter where you are in the ship.
You get a balcony view, and you get a balcony view, and you get a balcony view.
It's like the Oprah of cruises.
But it's this, but the weird thing is, it's the same camera, so you're all seeing the same thing. It's kind of weird.
You are all seeing the same view, yes. But it's basically there is part of a wall that is structured with curtains, and it is a large, like an 80-inch flat panel monitor or TV screen, whatever, and it is connected to a high-def camera that is outside the ship, and you get to see the ocean. So if you have a interior ship cabin, you could feel like you have a balcony view. So just trying to mix things up with new technology that can make people enjoy their cruises a little bit more.
And don't worry, it's not like a CRT screen. It's
no.
You're not going to see bars going up and down it.
No.
So does it cost less to get like the TV screen room? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, it really didn't mention anything about that. It really just lauded the fact that you get this high-def 4K monitor to see the ocean with no matter where you are, where your cabin is located. But pricing was not really mentioned in the article.
Okay.
The next article that we had was from Dave, and sci-fi is finally getting off their butts and actually making good sci-fi and not the crappy Monster of the Week stuff that we've been subjected to. They are going to be doing Arthur Clarke's 3001, which is the final novel in that series, which started with 2001. So, it was 2001, 2010. I think the next one was like 2064, and then 3001.
So this one takes place, well, obviously 1,000 years after the 2001 Space Odyssey, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, and that's being done, it's going to be a mini series, and it's going to be done from Ridley Scott's production company. So hopefully the awesome that is Ridley Scott will rub off on this and it won't suck. Okay. Anessa brought to the table the Japanese Science Fiction Award, with open entries to Aliens and Computers. So it is not discriminating against artificial intelligences that could put together, become creative and write stories. So it's one of the more inclusive sci-fi awards available to any being of any type or persuasion.
And this spurred a great conversation about, we're in trouble when artificial intelligence is able to get into the creativity game, because we worry about like robots and artificial intelligence taking over menial jobs. But like we thought for sure, artists, singers, painters, whatever, what have you, were safe because, robots or artificial intelligence could never do that kind of stuff, but maybe not.
Well, at some point in the future, it could happen.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys watched the Chappie trailer from Neil Blomkamp or whoever you pronounce his last name. That's how I do it. There's a scene where he literally prints out like a painting of a car or something. It's a small clip, but this story totally reminds what you said, Dave, totally reminds me of that little clip in that movie. I can't wait to see it. It looks more District 9 and less Elysium, mm-hmm. which was not that great.
Have you seen, there's another robot movie out, and it stars mm-hmm. damn it. He used to be married to, was it Meg Ryan? He's of Spanish.
Oh, Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, Antonio Banderas, yeah.
Movie from Spain.
Yeah. Hmm. And that's about artificial intelligence or robots who basically are self-realized or become self-realized. And that looks really, really good. I believe it's been out for a while. Well, it's been out for maybe a month and a half, and I think it's available on like pay-per-view and downloads. So if you get a chance, check it out.
Familiar.
It's Automata, I think?
Yeah, yeah. That's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, Brad, continue.
Yes. The Elsnerds were our guest geeks. So we had Gregor Sprague and Corey Scott on the show. And Gregor brought to the table the Captain Marvel comic writer, shocked people by creating or writing up essentially... Oh, I'm sorry. No, this is the other story. He had gone on record saying that Captain Marvel will be the movie that we probably would never see. And then Marvel had their massive bomb drop of a slate of films that they were going to be doing. And Captain Marvel was one of them on there. And he ate some crow and said he couldn't be more thrilled that that's actually going to come to pass. So we are going to see a female lead comic book hero movie. Finally, it should have been Black Widow, but we're gonna get Captain Marvel instead.
But it almost makes up for, I mean, waiting this long for a female-led superhero movie, and it being her almost makes up for that long wait because she actually has powers and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much that you could do. I mean, watching Captain America: The Winter Soldier, not a whole lot of powers in there.
Nope.
For the most part. But the spy thriller action is the main driving element of that movie. So I think that you could quite easily – there's no excuse.
Yeah.
You know, all the – and I don't want to dwell on this too much, but mm-hmm. Catwoman, the piece of garbage that we got in the early – earlier in the 2000s, that was an insult.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they have a bad, a terrible track record of having female lead superhero films so far.
And they try to put, you know, the TNA in front of actually having a good story.
Yeah, that's too bad.
And that's what's been the problem.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see Marvel taking the lead and giving the big middle finger to DC, saying you should have had a Wonder Woman movie out years ago. And they're actually going to do something with a lesser known female hero, but at least we're making some strides forward in that regard. Mm-hmm. And last but certainly not least, Corey Scott's article is "The Future Is Here! Insanely Cool Flying Car Very Close to Production." So very soon you could have your own flying car in your super awesomely huge carport and you could fly to work.
I still want one that is a briefcase. Like, and I don't want it like a I want it to be a helicopter, like on Inspector Gadget.
Yeah. You just want to step on your briefcase and have it levitate you to work.
That's
is
even,
that what you're saying?
That's even better. Yeah. I like that a lot. So we have to solve the anti-gravity thing. That's the next.
And some sort of seat belt. So if you're like over a skyrise and you fall off, like you're not going to fall to your death.
Yeah.
Have a parachute.
A parachute? That's very low-tech. I think we could come up with something a little more futuristic, like jet I don't know. Maybe
we would add reflector tape to the parachute to make it look cooler.
Yeah, it's just like a snowboard, and you like strap yourself in, and then if you do fall off, it just auto-corrects itself.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Very good, Brad.
So here you go. That's the minutes from the last meeting.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's move on to new business. And Matt is not here. I forgot to mention that top of the show. Matt got called away on emergency work stuff. So that's two shows in a row he's missed. So he better better make up for it next week. We've had this story sitting here waiting for him for the past 2 weeks. So,
and it's a good one, too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. So he's usually first in the lineup. Brad, you're next, so you're first.
All right. So the story I brought to the table is finally the mega hit Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be coming out on Blu-ray, DVD, very shortly, but they spent a goodly amount of time making some decent extra content for it. And James Gunn did an interview where he talked about some of those extras, and we're gonna go over it here.
Sweet.
James Gunn posted on Twitter, I do think of dealing with Guardians of the Galaxy as being an untrammeled snow. And the first thing that excited me about Guardians before any story elements or anything else was actually created, was actually creating the visual look. And the very first thing I did was I sat down and I wrote a 19-page document that was called The Look of Guardians of the Galaxy. So one of the things that he's done, because this whole thing was very visually driven and very just so stunningly beautiful to sit and watch that. You felt like you were in space. And I didn't even go to the IMAX showing of that, or even the 3D version of it. Just the 2D, and it was so immersive. What they've done is to take that look, that sort of 19-page Bible, if you will, and actually created extras around that. So he showed off an 8-bit animation done for the Blu-ray, and also some of the extra clips that he had were interviews with some of his thoughts as to why he was excited about even being given the project, even before it shot and it was announced that he put his name in the hat and he got the gig. So he was really all for this. And I think even on when we talked about it on Alien Invasion and the name James Gunn was thrown out, I had seen Slither. And I've seen some of his other work that he's done through Troma Studios. And he's such an interesting dude. And it was a concept and a grouping of characters that was just so right up his alley that it was really awesome that he got the gig. And it showed in the box office results.
Has he talked about whether he is or was, before he got this movie, a comic book fan or a superhero fan?
I don't recall, but you know, he worked for Troma Studios, which, for those of you that don't know, Troma Studios created the Toxic Avenger. They did Tromeo and Juliet, so that was like a send up of that, but changing. It had a very B movie feel, but it also had definite tips of the hat, or it had a feeling of being comic book related. So I would not be shocked or amazed if he was big into comics.
Brad, do your shocked and amazed face, please.
My shocked and amazed face?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa. He's definitely into comics, I can tell, because he's super excited. I think this is going to be the first Marvel movie I buy on Blu-ray. I don't buy a lot of Blu-rays. I usually just rely on the theater and Netflix being kind to us Canadians. Occasionally they unleash the gems upon us up here. But I love this movie so much, and I cannot wait to pick it up on Blu-ray. I have a man crush on Chris Pratt, and I was crushed to read that he turned down the role for Nathan Drake in the Uncharted movie. Crushed. But I did see some of these extras on this webpage, and just, man, that guy is just so funny. Even when he's, like, not acting, he's just always on. And because of this movie, I watched, like, all 6 seasons of Parks and Rec and continue to love this guy.
Wait a second.
I can't wait for Jurassic Park. It's going to be amazing.
Wait a second, Ryan. You didn't watch Parks and Rec before you watched this movie?
No, I hate Amy Poehler. I hate Amy Poehler. I could not watch Parks and Rec. Couldn't stand her. I thought she was the most annoying person. But you know why I thought that? I'm an awful person, but Baby Mama is a terrible movie. And I made the mistake of catching that movie before Parks and Rec. So, yeah, Amy Poehler was ruined for me, and I was like, I'm not watching that. It's got that weird, annoying chick from Baby Mama. It's probably why I haven't watched 30 Rock or whatever at all either. Probably due to the fact that Tina Fey was also in Baby Mama.
It only takes one sometimes. Just one bad experience.
And 30 Rock is such a good show.
I know. And again, like, I'm kind of at the point where I've realized my mistake with Parks and Rec, and that, like, you know, every person needs a paycheck. I get it. They did Baby Mama. I'm sure it paid for their car payment or something, but maybe a house payment.
And, you know,
right. And maybe initially, like, the script wasn't half bad either, and then just what was cut out and edited and ultimately made into the final product, it just...
The way Amy Poehler acts in that movie, they would have had to cut a lot of extra good stuff. She is a baby in that, and her voice is so annoying, but in Parks and Rec, she's adorable. And I just... you're probably right, it's the writing in general, like... When you compare Baby Mama to Parks and Rec, I know this isn't sci-fi at all, but, you know, it is kind of sci-fi because one is out of this world and one is in the depths of a pit that used to be an outhouse.
You know, it's fun. It's interesting because Chris Pratt was just like an ancillary character in the first season. Like, he was barely on the show. He was What's-Her-Face's boyfriend who had the broken leg sitting on the couch all day playing video games.
Yeah, the writers the writers and directors of that show have some interesting stories about him that when I love something, I go into a Google fit and I learn everything I possibly can. Did it with Doctor Who and spoiled a bunch of stuff. But it's interesting because they say, like, his funniest line that he's ever had was one of them where he's on the computer and there's, like, technical error and he's talking about, oh, it's got a connectivity issue. I can't remember it especially, but I guess it was all ad-libbed.
Oh, wow.
And that was the funniest thing that the writers thought was on the show, and it turns out it was just ad-libbed by Chris Pratt.
Holy crap. Yeah, that guy's great. He's talented. All right.
No, he's a very interesting dude and very genuine, too. So,
Brad, what are some of the extras?
So some of the extras that we're going to see are, and the one thing that I'm really looking forward to is Chris Pratt is going to give a tour of the Xander crash site. So towards the end of the film where they've crashed – and they need to go up against Lee Pace's character. You get to see what the crash site, the whole green screen, and it's a green screen bonanza. There are a few practical set pieces, but it's swimming in a sea of green that they're working in. So you get to
there's Chris
get
Pratt
all
right
his
there.
Ad-libbing goodness while he dances around and talks about the Xander crash site and so many other things too. They're keeping a little bit quiet on everything, but
I want to know, is Chris Pratt in the DVD audio commentary? Because I would listen to that.
That'd be funny. That'd be very funny.
Now, the thing about me, Ryan, is I'm such a huge comic book nerd that I have all of the Marvel movies on DVD.
Perfect.
All of them.
Buy the phase box set?
No, I did not. That was way too expensive. I wasn't going to be able to.
Right, you're more the installment of 1995 every 6 months kind of guy, right?
Yeah, pretty much. That's me. That's really me. So a lot of things to look forward to. The movie is going to be dropping on December 9th. So that will be available for purchase right before Christmas, everybody. Woohoo!
Yep.
Yay!
It won't be on my list. I'll be buying it day one.
Yeah, I think I will too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not on my shopping list for Brad because he would buy it before Christmas came around.
Yep. And I'm such a huge nerd that I will watch the movie and then I will turn on the commentary and watch it again. And that's how much of a nerd I am about this.
Well, hang on a second. Hang on a second, Brad. Do you have a Blu-ray player?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a PlayStation 3.
Okay. So. All right.
I do the same thing when it comes to – I always say DVD. It's so much easier than saying Blu-ray, but people know we're talking about Blu-rays. Like, I'm right there with you. And also, like, when you buy a Blu-ray, it always comes with a DVD. You can't not buy a Blu-ray that doesn't come with a DVD.
Once in a while, you'll get one that's just like DVD only. But for the most part, it's like DVD, Blu-ray, digital download.
Yep.
Yeah. Like I got like the Lego movie and I opened it up and there was like two discs and many leaflets explaining to me how I could get my digital copy on ultraviolet digital light or whatever they call it. But
You know, yeah. they should do the ultimate pack. Like every possible like form of home video there's ever been. Like they should do Blu-ray, well, maybe ultra high definition, and then Blu-ray, and then DVD, and mm-hmm. then VHS. You got your beta and your Laserdisc. Do it all.
The great thing about it is that Marvel is Disney, and if it came in VHS, you'd get those plastic puffy cases. And that would be rad. You remember those things?
Yeah.
You'd have your stupid cardboard sleeves and then your massive plastic puffy cases that, you know, really just made the art pop, right?
Yeah.
Plastic rather than cardboard.
So, yeah, that wraps that up. Guardians of the Galaxy, get the Blu-ray. You're going to get so much more content. And I always go for the Blu-ray / DVD, so that way if one of them self-destructs, I still have the film in some fashion or another.
Good idea,
but,
yeah.
But you should totally get it because they're not going to skimp on the awesome extra features.
And James, I saw an article today. I didn't read it, didn't have time to read it, but he was talking about the sequel already and his ideas for it.
Yes.
Did you happen to see that? Did you see that, Brad?
He's all in on this. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So I brought not one but two stories because I couldn't resist. The first one almost slipped through the cracks. I almost totally forgot about this. Star Wars Episode 7 officially unveiled their title last week. It is Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
Hmm.
How do you guys feel about that?
It's a name.
I don't know. I'll wait for the trailer.
Yeah, which I think is coming soon. I'm guessing probably around Christmas time we'll see the first trailer for it.
Yeah,
probably.
I hope so. I mean, I'm a firm believer that you're in three camps. One, you're either a Doctor Who, you're in Star Wars, you're in Star Trek. And I never really belonged to any camp until I started watching Doctor Who, and I'm totally in that camp. Occasionally, I'll like get a day pass for the other ones, but yeah, my base camp is Doctor Who. But Star Wars Episode 7, like I can wait for it to come out. I'm not super. When it comes, I'll go see it. But they announced this title like it's this huge thing. But I guess everything about this when it's official news is always huge. And The Force Awakens is a great title just in terms of like this is a franchise that's been on ice for let's say 40 years. We're not even going to think about those prequels because it's been on carbonite or whatever the Han Solo thing they froze them in.
It's been backed up on carbonite. What
is it, carbonite or was it carbon or what was it?
It was carbonite. It was carbonite.
Carbonite. Okay.
Yeah.
He just looked like a chocolate Easter bunny that went wrong, but The title makes sense. It's it is 40 years since Episode 6.
Yeah.
So The Force Awakens. It's been peace for so long, and all of a sudden something bad's happening. So hey, the Force has got to wake up and save the day.
Yeah, and people were complaining about this title. I don't know why, because every Star Wars title is they have a weird naming convention because they all go back to the 1930s, 1940s movie serials. That's where they get that whole naming convention from. It's very weird sounding in this day and age. You know, The Force Awakens, The Return of the Jedi, The Empire Strikes Back. What were the prequels?
Phantom Menace, Clone Wars, and the good one, Sith Lord something. I can't even remember what
it's Return
called.
Of the Sith? The Sith Circus?
No. Please, God, make it stop.
Oh, well, it's funny, like, that. They kind of, like, torture you with 1 and 2, and then 3 is like, okay, I only remember the good bits, honestly. Like, I remember the pod race, the Yoda fight, and the lava fight dance. So that's, like, maybe 20 minutes altogether of, like, 6 hours of movies. But Indiana Jones does this too, right? Oh. They have the same weird naming convention.
The third one was Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
Right. I knew it was Sith. Okay. It was something.
All right.
But
there's some people guessing as mm-hmm. to where this name comes from. One of the theories is that Luke Skywalker, he's so powerful now that he's isolated himself, and there's people that want to find him to use his power. for bad and for good. That's one of the plot rumors. So that's The Force Awakens. That's where that comes from.
That's a good story. I'd watch that movie.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's my first story. My second story is HBO is making Isaac Asimov's Foundation series with Interstellar's Jonathan Nolan. Mm. How do you guys feel about that?
iRobot was terrible. So hopefully Will Smith is not touching this. I don't know. I don't really know a lot about Foundation. I tried to look it up on Wikipedia. Evidently, it's like a six-book series.
It's huge. It's like it puts Game of Thrones series to shame, like the book series to shame. It's got a ton of books, and it's very deep. There's a lot going on there, and I think HBO is the perfect platform for this.
Agreed, yeah. Yeah, HBO can kind of do no wrong when it comes to adapting large book series, and also it looks like they're teaming up with Warner Brothers, and we all know they have really great experience with turning, you know, a very popular book series into a hit series of movie content with Harry Potter. So, yeah, I mean, I think you picked the right people. You know, Jonathan Nolan is certainly hot right now with Interstellar and those Batman flicks. So,
yeah, well, was he involved with his brother on the Batman movies?
I think he helped write all of them, I believe. Okay. If not, I believe they've worked together a lot.
I think he had, at least on the last one, I think he was in on that one for sure, but probably all of them.
So, Brad, you're a bookie, right? You're a book person.
Janessa is probably a little bit more than me, but...
So have either of you guys read any of the Foundation series books?
I have not.
Okay. No, I've read some of the Caves of Steel stuff, but not Foundation, no.
Okay. Well, do you guys want a quick, like, plot synopsis?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure,
yeah. All right, so the series is set on a remote planet called Terminus, not the place where the cannibals are on Walking Dead. This is someplace else.
I don't think they want to stay there. That's...
Okay. It's where... a mathematician and psychologist by the name of Harry Seldon was exiled, and basically, for clarification purposes, he never physically makes it there, but he's on his way there, and the reason he's going there, it's due to his ability to predict the crumbling of the Galactic Empire, like, thousands of years in the future. Like, he has this, I guess, weird way, through math and science, of figuring out how this great galactic empire is going to crumble someday, like millennia in the future. And that's the whole basis. There's a lot more going on than just that, but that's where the series of these books start.
Huh. Certainly sounds like it'd make an interesting TV show. And it's really neat to see like old content like that get sort of updated for the modern audience. I like the last book was in the 90s. With the earliest in the 70s, I trying to think back to my Googling that I was doing, but I mean, HBO could certainly use some more geeky content, and I'm not really looking forward to see how they kind of try and sex it up.
It's HBO, right? There's got to be some nudity and some sex involved, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think anybody wants to see Harry Seldon, the mathematician and psychologist, work his way up Terminus.
It's not nearly as sexy.
I can't wait to do the science fiction. Like, let's start with that.
It's not sexy. It's not as sexy as Game of Thrones, that's for sure.
Well, some would argue Game of Thrones is kind of nasty when it comes to that stuff. It's not sexy at all.
But, you know, this is another sign that science fiction, like pure, like... pure old-fashioned science fiction is on its way back, because Sci-Fi Channel in the States is doing their... What's the alien show that they're making a miniseries on? Is it... what's the name of that one? Can you recall? Or Anessa?
No.
We talked about it on the Alien Invasion podcast.
Crap in a hat.
What?
No, it's...
yeah, that was my first thought, but I'm like, that's not it.
Dang it.
But that's Asimov, right? I believe. I think.
Oh, you're talking about 3001?
No, not 3001. It's an Asimov.
Tiffy's been busy.
Yeah, no, they're tearing it up. They got a lot of cool stuff coming our way.
But still Sharknado 3, right? There's still...
Oh, that's, yeah. That's,
okay. Let's hope not.
The third one.
Yeah. I just want to make sure that they're not throwing away the gold, right? Like, come on.
I was tempted to buy Sharknado 2 at Walmart the other day just so I could watch it.
They have those all those establishing story shots of Tara Reid, and I'd hate to see them throw that all away for some Isaac Asimov, miniseries. Come on.
Yeah. How dare them go back to doing science fiction?
Yeah. Well, some would argue sharks in
No, it's not. It's not science fiction.
It's well, scientific and it's
probably more fantasy, but...
Yeah, well... They try to
mix in science with it, like, oh, look, there's this big vortex, blah, 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 throw in science words. Sharks.
Sure. Let's Google, science words for tornadoes. Let's go.
Brad, did you find it?
Twister over and over again.
Brad, no. did you find it, Brad?
Is it Dominion?
No, it's not.
It's not Z Nation, I hope.
No.
There's no aliens in that one, but...
Okay, wait. In development.
Because they have a bunch of different shows in development, and one of them is an Asimov story.
Something... Is it Blade Runner?
No, not Blade Runner.
It's the upcoming programs. You got Ascension, Unbreakable, 12 Monkeys, Hunters, Proof, Blake 7, The Expanse, Warriors of Oz, Olympus, The Magicians, Childhood's End.
Childhood's End. Childhood's End. That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
And then the last one being Killjoys after 3001, The Final Odyssey.
Okay. So suffice it to say, lots of science fiction coming from sci-fi in the very near future. All right. Let's move on to Anessa's story. What did you bring to the table this week?
Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about this guy named James L. Rusty Hevelin. And he was a fan and a collector for most of his life of science fiction. He bought pulp magazines from newsstands as a boy in the 1930s, and by the early 1940s began attending some of the first organized science fiction conventions. He remained an active collector, fanzine creator, a book dealer, and a fan until he died in 2011. His collection came to the University of Iowa Libraries in 2012, which contributed significantly to UI Library's reputation as a major international center for sci-fi and fandom studies. Since they have this collection in their possession, the University of Iowa Libraries has announced a major digitization initiative in partnership with the University of Iowa Office of the Vice President, blah, 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 blah. So 10,000 science fiction fanzines will be digitized from the James Hevelin collection, representing the entire history of science fiction as a popular genre and providing the content for a database that documents the development of science fiction fandom. So.
You know what? I'm kind of pissed off. I lived in Iowa for a year and a half. I didn't know that the University of Iowa was this science fiction epicenter for literature. I had no idea.
I had no idea either. And it's kind of along the same lines of MIT having their big science fiction collection as well, except whereas MIT started their sci-fi club way back in the day, University of Iowa is a recently acquired status. And so the fanzines, if people don't really know, they are amateur publications made by individuals or groups that discuss books, films, politics, and other public or personal matters. The science fiction fanzine writers that they have there in the collection were ultimately involved with many aspects of science fiction literature during the golden years of its development. The list of names, which is quite impressive, include Ray Bradbury, Robert Heinlein, Arthur C. Clarke, Robert Bloch, Leigh Brackett, Frederick Pohl, and that's really just to name a few. There's like this huge, huge list, and it even includes George R.R. Martin. And so some of the earliest works by these writers can be found in Rusty's collection of fanzines, along with important writing from all the major fans who created this new form of popular culture. So Greg Prickman, the head of special collections, and a guy with the horrible last name, Prickman.
Courthouse, $50.
Says, nothing on this scale has been attempted with fanzines before, and we were thrilled to be able to finally address the concern we have been hearing for years from fans and scholars, to find a way to enable them to discover exactly what these pieces contain. Once digitized, the fanzines will be incorporated into the UI Library's DIY history interface, where a select number of interested fans, up to 30, will be provided with secure access to transcribe, annotate, and index the contents of the fanzines. This group will be modeled on an amateur press association structure, APA, a fanzine distribution system developed in the early days of the medium that required contributions of content from members in order to qualify for and maintain membership in the organization. So the transcription will enable the URL libraries to construct a full text searchable fanzine resource with links to authors, editors, and so on and so forth. But yeah, it doesn't say how long they're planning it to potentially take, but I'll definitely mention an update the next time I get one. So
yeah, I you know, Anessa, I love the fact that you're on this whole science fiction museum story thing.
It's just really interesting because you don't realize how much is out there, how much is being done regarding science fiction until you really start looking. And you have to go past, sometimes it's easy to find and other times it's a little more obscure, like after going through, like, oh, you know, here's the billionth Destiny review, or here's another Star Wars update. Someone cut their hair shorter than they expected or whatever. And so, yeah, sometimes it's easy to find, sometimes it's a little more obscure, but it's just amazing at how much is actually going on out there that you just don't know about.
And not to mention all the freaking comic book superhero stories, like it's almost hard to find a non-superhero comic science fiction story to push out to our listeners sometimes.
Yeah.
There's so many of them right now.
Not even just like comic book. There's, you know, there's the comic book thing going on, and then you've got Star Wars and you've got Star Trek, and those are the big three that are really happening right now, and so it's a lot to go through.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're not careful or don't really look hard enough, then you might miss something like this. But yeah, I had no idea that there was such a huge collection at the University of Iowa, of all places.
Yeah, cool.
Iowa. Day trip or something. I don't know.
This
is really interesting in the fact that it's sort of how they spread it. From my understanding, this is the first I've heard of like fanzines, but from my understanding, it sounds like this is what they did in place of the internet back in the day. Like they'd publish stories to these little fanzines and get them out there to the true hardcores, right? Like it's almost like a subreddit or something, you know? And just less commenting, I guess, which is probably perfect. They turned off the comments on things.
Well, I'm sure they probably had like little editor's notes or something, or sure. You know, people can write in, so they've got like 4 or 5 pages of comments and questions. But for the most part, yeah, you know, you've read, you know, the sci-fi and fantasy magazines or whatever comics are coming out or books, and then you're like, oh, this has inspired me to write like a fan fiction type thing or come up with my own little story and to comment on society. And I'm going to send this in, and then it will hopefully be printed into this fanzine that's not quite as popular as the magazines, but it still gets out there. So
yeah, it's interesting. They also say that they're transcribing it and annotating it and all that. So like it might even be possible to search a database and find specific mm-hmm. stories from specific authors. So if you're a fan, a super huge fan of George R. R. Martin, you can find some of his earlier work. And, you know, the internet sort of like percolated that up a bit as he's gained popularity, but it'd be really interesting to kind of find all of those little works that he's done through the fanzines and kind of get like an early view of what this guy's writing was like.
Yeah, and see how much it's changed. And yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Cool.
That's really cool.
Very interesting stuff, Anessa.
Thank you.
All right. So, last but not least, before we get into Ryan's story, I totally forgot to ask you your hypothetical question at the top of the show. I was so excited to have you on. I forgot to ask you your question, Ryan Murphy.
Right.
Which was, hang on, documents being kind of slow here. All right. So your question is, what's the best or scariest zombie from any video game ever? That's your question. In your opinion.
In my opinion, which probably should not put any strength into, but I will say that my pick for scariest zombie in a video game would have to be the Resident Evil remake on GameCube, where you'd kill a zombie and it would fall over dead, and then internal the game clock, 2 or 3 hours later, if you didn't burn it, it would come back to life as like this red skull zombie that had long nails. They were called crimson zombies. They had long nails and they'd run, which was very different for the early Resident Evil games. They'd run after you and they were almost an instant kill because they'd grab you, tear into you, and just gnaw your face off.
God, that's nightmare stuff right there.
Yeah, and funny enough, Capcom really never stuck with it. They had it in that one game and then it's never been back. And you're actually going to be able to play that version of the game on your new consoles in 2015 as they're re-releasing it again on next gen and I believe previous gen as well. But and it was a finite element that you could use to burn the corpses. So you had to have like a lighter and lighter fluid, and that was, you only had so many charges. It was kind of like your save, your ink or whatever to save. And that's definitely the scariest zombie that I can think of, because all the other zombies are just so comical, right? It's just that Resident Evil really did it right back in the day.
All right.
I didn't get to play that for GameCube. But yeah, the only thing that I can really think of would be the Left 4 Dead games, and you've got this, the weeping zombie.
The weeping zombie. Hang on a second. The weeping zombie? What the hell is that?
Yeah, she was the witch. And with Left 4 Dead, when you go out and you're killing zombies, you've got different types of zombies. There's one that is really gross, and he's really big and bloated, and he'll like explode.
Yeah.
But there's one, because you know, you'll be in like this hallway or next to in an alleyway or something, and you'll just hear like this weeping, like sort of thing, and you don't know where it's coming from, and as you're moving farther or closer away, it'll, you know, get louder. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there's like this witch zombie that just comes after you.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. And there's always that one guy in your party who just has to shoot the witch.
No, come on.
So.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it's like I hear it and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go the other way now.
That's a close second. I would agree with you there.
Because sure. That would be the only other one that I could think of, because yeah, I haven't played Resident Evil 2 for GameCube. I still have my GameCube, but yeah.
How about you, Brad?
Maybe I can find it.
For zombies?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, the only zombie game that I own is Left 4 Dead.
There's some games, though, that zombies appear, right? They're not the main protagonist, but or antagonist, but they appear, right?
Yeah, the only other game that I think I've played has been, I wanted to say Silent Hill for a second, but that's not it. But they had a version of the game where it was a, like a typing thing where it was a way to teach kids to type.
What?
And you had to quick type out the words that would show up on the screen or the zombie would get you.
Oh my God. That's a, talk about pressure.
What is it? And it's from a series of games.
So it was a kid's game? It was like a learning game?
Sort of.
Wow, you better learn or you're going to die.
It was called The Typing of the Dead, but it was a part of the House of the Dead series. And in the game, you had to, these words would come up and you had to type them out as quickly as you could, or these zombies would eat your face.
Wow. Jesus. Okay. All right.
Wow.
I'm scared just thinking about it. All right, Ryan, what do you got for us there? Your story.
Well, speaking of sci-fi and the Sci-Fi Channel, and Nolan, Interstellar, Battlestar Galactica, all awesome things. Sci-Fi has a new miniseries coming out in December called Ascension, which is an interesting take on sort of the let's save the Earth sort of storylines. In 1963, the U.S. government put together a project to send a bunch of scientists into space to preserve humanity as the Earth was slowly being devoured by the Cold War. Obviously, that didn't happen. So the drama, what appears to be in this in these trailers, is that you've got two worlds happening. You've got the world on Ascension, the ship, and how that is taking place 50 years after its launch, and how they are surviving and how they're doing. And then you also have Earth, where the son of the father who created this project is trying to determine, because it was all secret, right? Trying to determine what's actually going on. So it sounds like there'll be like parallel storylines, drama going on at on Earth, and drama going on the spaceship, and I'm sure it all ends with humanity being doomed because everybody in these trailers looks like assholes.
Especially, what's her face that played number 6 on Battlestar Galactica, Trisha Helfer. She looks like the same character. She looks like number 6 from Battlestar Galactica on the preview.
Would it kill her to get an acting role where she can smile? Because I'm sure she'd look fantastic if she just smiled, and she would not look evil at all.
I mean, she's Canadian, so she has to be nice, right?
Maybe that's why she's always evil, because her whole life she was just raised to be Canadian, and she's like, you know what? I'm gonna be an actor.
And I'm sick
always
of saying
act like not a Canadian.
I'm sick of saying sorry. No more. Sorry, no more.
Sorry, no more. I am going to be a robot, and then a Zerg thing. And I don't know what else she's in. I can't think of anything either.
She was on a cop show that ended up getting canceled. It was like Killer Women, I think. And she, I only watched a couple of episodes, and it was just so over the top with their stereotypes. And it took place near San Antonio. And there's this wedding, and apparently everybody that goes to a wedding in Texas carries a gun. Because there's this big shootout. And she kind of smiled there with a scene with some kids and stuff. But yeah, for the most part, she had a serious role being a cop trying to find people and bring them to justice and whatnot. Yeah. So.
Don't get me wrong, I love Trisha. I think she's fantastic. I'm just giving her a hard time. And
yeah. She needs to smile. Maybe
yeah,
she can do a comedy or something.
Maybe. Actually, you know what? Good old rom-com. Throw a rom-com in there, Trisha, and you'd be fantastic.
Well, but you know what? That could backfire on you, too, because look at companion Amy. Amy, who played Amy on Doctor Who?
Karen Gillan.
Karen Gillan. That selfie show totally bombed. So. You got to be careful.
Yeah, it's a shame because, the first episode was kind of rough. But by the second or third episode, it was really starting to pick up and got a lot better. It was starting to find its groove and its flow. And so, but I think by that point, a lot of people had already started giving up on it. So
this was a show. Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. But she actually played, like, she may have a failed TV show. Maybe her first issue was being in a show called Selfie. I mean, titles are everything.
Yeah.
Let's start with that. But she actually played Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy.
No, she was great as Nebula. Yeah, that was a great role.
It's unfortunate that you would never know it's her because she's covered in blue makeup and doesn't have her stylish red hair. But, I think she did fantastic. But... yeah, and I'm all for, like, I'm that kind of person who, like, gets into a show and be like, I need to see these people in as many different things as possible.
I'm
so
sensing
with Doctor
a,
Who, it's like...
I'm sensing a pattern, Ryan.
Yeah, I've got a jumping issue. just all over the place. But unfortunately for Doctor Who, like, those guys don't go anywhere. Like, I don't know if they live off of, like, residuals or... People just don't want to hire them because they've been on this sci-fi show, but
I don't know. You know,
some
hang...
of them do because I mean,
Captain
Jack, he ended up being the big bad on Arrow.
Yeah, and
there for a while.
Hell, and... he's still on the show. And then there's, I mean, Tennant is doing the Broadchurch, and then
he did Broadchurch, and now he's doing Gracepoint.
And
I want to check out Gracepoint. Is it any good?
I compared it. Well, the thing is, the problem that I had was I saw Broadchurch.
Oh,
which
I see.
Is really good. But had I not seen Broadchurch, I would really like Gracepoint.
So do I start with Gracepoint because it's
I would say start with Gracepoint.
Because the actual thing will ruin the Fox show for me.
Yeah, well, because, you know, I watched the first episode and it was like watching the exact same thing, just with different people.
And yeah, Tennant's got an American accent.
The accents are different. His accent's different. It comes out a little bit on certain words, but for the most part, it's gone. And
really?
Throughout the entire show, though, they do end up changing. It's one long whodunit, and they changed whodunit.
Typical Americans.
Who had already seen Broadchurch or had somehow heard who actually killed the kid. So
interesting.
I really enjoyed Broadchurch, so I think the Grace Point. I think you'd probably enjoy Grace.
They changed it because of the British version, because people would already know who did it. That's why they changed who killed them or who the
suspect. I'm pretty sure, because I mean, why would you sit there and rewatch a show with different people if the same person did it?
That's true. That's very true. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I mean, these days, back in the day, like 20 before the internet, basically, when we lived in a world where we were sort of separated, mm-hmm. Because you weren't watching those shows. It's like Sherlock in right now. There's no reason for them to make an American version of that show, because I can. Yeah.
And they kind of did with Elementary, but they totally changed everything up, so it's not like you're really watching the same thing. Even with bringing The Office over. I know the beginning was very similar to the UK, and then they're like, yeah, we need to do our own thing now. So they kind of branched off.
We'll see what they do
I'm glad they did, because I did not enjoy the British Office.
We'll see what they do with the IT Crowd, because they're doing an American version of that now, too.
Again?
I've been trying to do that for a while.
Yeah.
I saw a pilot like a couple years ago that they did for the IT Crowd, and it had Joel McHale, and it had Maurice Moss, like the actor that plays Moss. And it was awful, honestly. Like, it had most of the same lines, but the chemistry and the flow just wasn't there. And I'm really glad that the pilot didn't go anywhere. But
does anyone actually believe that Joel McHale is funny? I mean, don't get me wrong, he's great in Community, but like, I think the supporting cast kind of helps him out there. Like, is he funny, or am I missing something? He is funny, but everything he does outside that is not funny.
Back when I had cable, I used to watch The Soup, and I thought he was funny.
I've never seen The Soup.
So, and I think a lot of it, though, was he had material to work off of. Was these ridiculous outtakes and whatnot from the week in TV. And that's kind of how I found out like what was going on with TV, because I never really watched it much.
You know, and that stuff writes itself, so...
Yeah, and it's one of those, I think he's good with taking material that's there and working with it and coming up with stuff. But yeah, it's probably a lot of the supporting actors and stuff in Community that help him out, but I haven't really seen him do stand-up or anything to really say whether he's genuinely funny or not.
All right, let's wrap up the news. Anything else you want to add to your story, Ryan, and then we can move on, or...
Just that I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks really cool. The trailers are really fresh. They look amazing. Much better than a lot of the sci-fi stuff I've seen lately from them. And it's nice to see Battlestar Galactica type content coming out of these guys again.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see the spaceship and how it's going to be eternally 1963.
Yes. Yeah, Mad Men in Space is what I've seen.
Yeah.
Tweeted.
Definitely. All right. There you go. That's our news. Let's touch on the stories that we may have missed that may have slipped through the cracks this week that we didn't cover in the main news. And Brad, maybe you want to pipe in on this one. The Fantastic Four reboot, reinventing Dr. Doom in the worst way possible. Did you read the story?
I read the headline, and I read like the first paragraph, and I wanted to weep openly, bitter tears of anger and regret that Fox has this property. And
Well, do you want to describe his origin story? Because it's totally different than.
Yeah, what they're trying to do is quote unquote gritty and more realistic. So, Dr. Doom in this is going to be now the thing to understand is the approach that they're taking is the ultimate universe. It is not the traditional universe of Fantastic Four that you're used to, okay? This that they're drawing from is they are all younger. They are in their late teens, early 20s. And they are, if it's like the Ultimates comic book, which it's what it sounds like, is Reed Richards doesn't launch them into space. He's actually figured out that there are other dimensions and pocket dimensions, and he creates a device to try to pierce that and to be able to see into these other, the spaces in between and other universes, other dimensions. And Doom is a part of this kind of a teenage genius think tank. And in this particular case, they're saying that he's got a name of he's a Russian first off, but his online moniker is Doom. His last name is like Domasev or something like that. It starts with a D-O-M, so he has the online moniker of Doom.
Okay.
So this goes horribly wrong. He's kind of caught up in it, and he ends up just becoming Doom. So
this Fantastic Four reboot is going to be either really, really good or terrible.
Is anyone else hoping that it's terrible so Marvel gets this back and does something a la, you know, shoot, the blind dude. What is it?
Daredevil?
Yes, thank you. I've seen the original Fantastic Fours, and actually I don't think I've seen the second one because the first one was just so bad. But Fox is doing great with X-Men. Why don't they apply what they've learned there to not do something crappy with Fantastic Four? Like, the concept behind Fantastic Four could work so well, like the family genre of it, and I don't know. I just have this feeling that this movie is going to be terrible. Like, it's going to be like TMNT terrible. Like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie that came out this summer. I think it's going to be like that. It's going to look great. It's going to sound great. But it's just going to be written terribly. The acting will be meh, you know, nothing to write home about, but not super terrible. But and it'll probably make millions of dollars, and Fox will hold on to this and make a bunch of sequels.
Yeah, with our luck, that's going to happen. You know, yeah. I hear nothing but bad things about it, so that's a bad sign.
Yeah, and maybe everyone's just bitter that it's not Marvel. Like, if Marvel were doing something like this, then we wouldn't even bat an eyelash. And I think Fox has sort of proven themselves just a little bit when it comes to the X-Men series. I mean, they had the couple of missteps with X-Men Origins, Wolverine, and X-Men 3, but 1 and 2 are good, and I watched the new X-Men movie. It's good, and the new Wolverine movie was good, so I don't know.
All right. Moving on to another comic book-related story, Big Hero 6 beat out Interstellar over the weekend at the box office. Not by much, though. Probably by 5 or 10 million, maybe.
Hmm.
Very, very close.
Yeah, it was neck and neck.
Yeah. But I could see why Big Hero 6 got the bigger box office. It's a broader range. More people can get into it. You can't bring your kids to Interstellar. Well, you could, but you probably don't want to.
You'd probably be bored.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to see Interstellar, and I don't know if there's anything in there that would scare your kids. I don't even think it's rated very high, right? It's just a science fiction adventure, but your kids are definitely going to pick the nice shiny cartoon over the weird, all right, you know, space adventure. Not that it's all right. I think it looks fantastic. I can't wait to see it.
I always call McConaughey all right, and my wife hates it. She just hates it. But every time I do it, so I have to continue doing it.
Well, yeah.
All right. So Iron Sky sequel is coming, and they released the trailer this week, and it looks just as good as the first one. Anessa, I know you're a big fan. What did you think of it? Did you see it?
No.
Oh.
I have not.
Why?
What?
I thought you were a big fan.
The president get away in a helicopter? That's as far as I got. But evidently,
I haven't had, like, I didn't know that it was out to see it. But yeah, I will definitely watch it and let you know what I think next week.
Okay. Well, here's something that might encourage you to watch it. I was in touch with the Iron Sky people, and we might get one of the filmmakers on the show. So
Shut up!
Are they still going to have, like, the Sarah Palin character?
Yeah, she's in the main person in the trailer.
Wait, she's the president?
Yeah, and Hitler...
Yeah, if you've not seen Iron Sky, the president of the United States is a Sarah Palin-esque character.
And in the trailer, Hitler is riding a dinosaur. Enough said.
Yeah, I just looked at the article, and there's Hitler atop a T-Rex.
Yeah, it's great.
And holding some reins, and I'm just like, wow, yeah, I'm definitely going to be watching that. I'm sold.
Okay, two more stories real quick. Another comic book one. Marvel Comics reveals the return to Battle World next year, their big major event of 2015. So they're doing Secret Wars 2, it sounds like.
I have a Battle World. I might still have some in my house, and it was ridiculous.
Don't hold back, Brad. Tell us how you really feel.
No, it was done in a style of, basically it was a game. It was, you would buy a comic book of your favorite character. And I think I had a whole bunch of the Battle World ones. I had like Elektra and all these different ones, and you could flip to a different page and there'd be different stats and different things. It was just dumb.
And it was a different, Iron Man, right? It wasn't Tony Stark.
I don't recall that, maybe.
Okay.
But,
all right. So thumbs down from Brad. All right. So last story that you may have missed this week, Mark Wahlberg officially cast as Steve Austin, a man barely alive. We can rebuild him. We can make him stronger, faster. This $6 million man we're talking about.
Hmm.
Pretty excited about this.
Well, I think they're going with $6 billion man, because $6 million doesn't buy you much nowadays.
No.
Get a pair of...
He can get, you know, rhinoplasty, a new chin, maybe
some
blood.
That's pretty much it.
What if it's like a throwback, like it's set in the 60s,
oh my
so
God.
$6 million man still applies.
Yes, that would be perfect.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Stuck without cell phones, and then you don't want that.
Oh, speaking of the 70s, have you guys caught that movie yet? We talked about it, I think, on this podcast earlier this year. It's the one that takes place in the 70s about the space station. It's on board a space station.
I forget the name of it.
That's out now. So if you have an inkling to see it, go. If I can figure out the name of it, which I can't figure out.
Space Station 70...
76?
Yeah, I think so.
Or 77, one of the two. Yeah, it looks terrible, but it looks terribly funny.
I like that. It looks terrible, but it looks terribly funny.
All right, so that's it for the news. Before we get out of here, feedback. Former, and this is a way for us to talk about the Doctor Who season finale, former Sci-Fi Geeks Club guest Daryl Johnston wrote a quick review of the season 8 Doctor Who finale, and he basically runs down each episode and gives, at the most, maybe 7-word review. So, so Ryan and Anessa, I know that you're the two biggest Doctor Who fans here. Do you want to just take one of your favorites off this list or take a couple of your favorites off this list and read them?
Well, I'm behind on season 8. But so these are perfect. I read these and I say, like, yep, that sounds like a Doctor Who episode to me. I'm really looking forward to, well, at least it wasn't a Dalek enema. That sounds fantastic. There's no way I need another one of those. What else is there? Space chickens. I'm kind of a little.
I do like the space chicken shonky physics dumb ending. Kill the moon.
Yeah.
And you have to realize, Ryan, that Daryl is British. He's from Britain. So you can hear his Britishism, his Englishness in these.
I mean, shonky physics is not American.
No.
Yeah. I thought that was a misspelled word for
honky.
Honky
physics.
Get it? Clucky physics? No. Brad got it.
Oh, you haven't seen all of them.
Female Master, spoiler alert.
Yeah,
come on, guys.
Sorry about that. Sorry about that.
That's funny because the BBC Twitter like was all over that. Like, guess what? That chick that you saw in like episodes prior, well, she's this. And it's like, well, all right, thanks, I guess.
Thanks for spoiling it.
Yeah, I guess the BBC has
no
cons. Is
going to turn into one of those weird house elves from Harry Potter 2? Like, I don't know.
Give him a sock so he can be free.
Yeah, exactly. Here you go, Peter. You go free. We're going to get another doctor in here. I powered through all of Doctor Who this summer, and then Matt Smith was taken away from me too soon, and I knew Peter Capaldi was coming, and I got through half of the first episode, and I was just so torn, and I'm like, I can't watch this.
Really?
So I'm going to watch it. I actually like Peter Capaldi. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, but he's fantastic, and he was great in his little bit part in World War Z, and I liked him in the first half of this. He's got that dynamic, like, jumping all over the place vibe, and I don't mind having an older doctor. I don't know, maybe I'm waiting until the whole season's out, and I guess I have that now.
See, I know what it is, Ryan. You were so used to powering through that just having one episode to watch totally threw you off. So
yeah,
you
gotta, that might be it.
Yeah, I think it is.
It took me a while to get into Matt Smith after David Tennant left. So I think I'm just going through, you know, I'm grieving. You know, I was, what are the five steps? I'm almost at acceptance. I was angry.
He was angry. He was in denial. This can't be happening.
That's a common thing to happen with Doctor Who. There's always that transition period between doctors.
Yeah.
Well, usually you have like 8 months, but because I powered through it.
And
I haven't had any time.
I had kind of the same thing because I went through with Christopher Eccleston and he was like dark, broody, I'm unhappy, something happened. And then you get hit with Tennant and he's like, hello. And just like really out there and very like much more animated. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't like this guy. I don't know what the fuss is about. And it took me like several episodes before I was like, okay, I like David Tennant.
See, I liked...
it took me a little while to warm up.
I liked Capaldi right away.
Yeah, and I think because Tennant was just so much more animated and stuff that it was easier for me to accept Matt Smith. And I like Capaldi, but I kind of wish that in this season it featured him more and Clara less. Because I think they focused a lot more on Clara and her story and like her having to, because she has a hard time accepting that she has a different doctor now. And
yeah, I never really enjoyed that.
And I'm done with her.
I think
I want Capaldi to,
she's gonna be gone.
Fingers crossed.
Didn't they say like this is her last year? Like,
there are rumors, and then she's like, no, I'm gonna come back. And so I don't know if in the Christmas special, Nick Frost is going to come along and be like, I fix all the things. Come back, Clara. And she's like, okay.
You know what? They really left it open. So it's possible that she may be back. Who knows?
Well, you know, they say female master, but like, why not a female doctor? Like, that sort of sets it up.
I just think that this was a way to prepare people for the possibility that, you know, it is possible for a Time Lord to regenerate as a female.
Always play the long game. And when we were talking with Daryl, who provided the feedback that we're commenting on, you know, he's from the UK, and he said, no, people here really aren't ready for a female doctor at all.
He did say that.
So if you want to make change happen, you need to gently throw water on people before you dunk them in the pool. You know, you got to kind of get them ready to have a
water
few
on the face.
Change.
But here, it's not that bad. Yeah. See?
And Missy Gomez as a female insane master was freaking amazing. Good. I loved that performance.
Yeah, she was really good.
Some of the best stuff.
I look forward to catching up in the coming months, probably just in time to watch the Christmas special. It'll be great to watch the Christmas special for Christmas as opposed to July, which always felt weird. You know? Like Matt Smith running around with like stockings and a weird Santa hat, and I'm like, This would be great if it was Christmas.
You know, Ryan, I did the same thing. I powered through all the episodes, I think, in the summer of 2011, mm-hmm. and I was experiencing the same thing, the Christmas episodes in the middle of July. So I feel your pain.
Yeah.
All right, so that's going to do it. Ryan, thanks a lot for coming on. Ryan Murphy, do you want to tell us about your podcast and what – break down each one for us and tell us what they're all about.
Sure. So first up, we have The Gamers Inn, which is a gaming podcast I do weekly with Jocelyn Moffitt of The Angry Chicken. We record every Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. And it's basically a weekly show where we just talk about what we've been playing, what caught our interest in the news, and it's you can find more about that at gamersinpodcast.com. We'll actually be talking about, obviously, BlizzCon this week, as Jocelyn was there in the flesh, and I was at home sulking with my virtual ticket. So that's going to be fun. Then we have Zombies Ate My Podcast, which is a weekly podcast about zombies, Walking Dead.
With Lou Page, right?
Yes, yeah, with Sir Lou Page, the busy zombie lord who's been on this show before.
Yeah, he has.
Mm-hmm. And he always...
I was on that episode, or was I? I don't remember. I feel bad.
Well, I think he's been on a few times, has he not?
No, just once. Just once.
No, just once.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just like, he told me just like, lay the groundwork there. Give me back. No, he didn't say that. I'm sure he'd be happy to be back on. I was talking to him prior after he was on, and he talked very highly about being on the show, and it has been a fantastic time.
Oh, cool.
We do spoiler discussions of The Walking Dead, and just recently we had Lauren Wilson on, author of the book The Art of Eating Through the Zombie Apocalypse, a cookbook / survival guide on what you can do to survive the zombie apocalypse. Fantastic read. And okay. You can find more info at zombiesatemypodcast.com. And finally, Sleeping with the Elephant with good old your buddy, Paul Swickard.
Yes.
Yeah. See, we talk about American culture, Canadian culture. We've actually had Dave on the show before, who's a bit of an interesting subject, as he's got feet in both pools, you know, like he's got the American side to him and then living in Canada now. And we have a lot of fun just chatting, comparing stories. I try to bring as many kooky Tim Hortons stories as possible, just to annoy Paul. And then I talk about hockey a lot. It really confuses him. You know, even though he's got like a superb team in his neck of the woods, he's from LA. Yeah, just can't get enough of it. And that's at sleepingwiththeelephant.com.
And
that's it.
Where do you want people to find you? Like, are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. You can follow me at rmurphy. And if you want to get more information about what I do, you can go to ryanmurphy.ca. And that's sort of like a collection of all the things.
All right. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. And for the record, Nessa, that show was done May 5th, and that was during the time that you were prepping to move to Wisconsin, so you were not on that show.
Okay.
I didn't think so, because I would have remembered talking about zombies and stuff with Lou.
Yeah. We'll have to.
He's a Doctor Who fan as well.
Yeah, we'll have to have him on again very, very soon.
Yeah, definitely, because, yeah, I was busy prepping and stuff for moving from Texas to Wisconsin.
Cool.
Real quick scheduling update here. We've got one more episode before Thanksgiving in the States. We're actually taking 2 weeks. No, 1 week off. Next week, we've got Jason Snell is going to be our guest on the show. And then the Thursday after Thanksgiving, Justin Robert Young from Night Attack is going to be on. So pretty excited about that. So some cool upcoming guests. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. Just search for Galactic Netcasts. Feedback, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call our voicemail number. That's 805-328-3966. Subscribe to us on Twitter, Stitcher. You can find us on TuneIn Radio as well. And I think that's going to do it. Thanks for joining us, everybody. And I call this meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club adjourned. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Dad.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.